For Wat Mapjan Monastery, this year marks the 41st Vasa, 3-month rains retreat. The first one was in 1985. It began with just 8 monks and 1 novice, and this year the number of monastics has grown to 66 monks and 1 novice. Some years there are fewer, some years more, depending on the faith and intention of those who come to ordain. The tradition of entering the rains retreat begins on the first day of the waning moon of the 8th lunar month, which is the day after Asalaha Puja. The retreat lasts for 3 months, known as a Ti Masa period. Ti means 3, Masa means month in Pali. So in English, we simply say 3 months or 90 days. During this period, monks must settle in one place to observe the retreat. Since the time of the Buddha, during the rainy season, it was difficult to travel. Walking would involve stepping on crops in the fields and disturbing or harming small creatures, since travel was done solely on foot. The paths were muddy and hard to navigate, often leading to the killing of many small creatures along the way. At first, there was no formal spending of the rains retreat, but lay people began to question why, that when even animals remain still in their habitats during the rainy season and don't venture out to find food, then why would monks walk around and damage crops and plants during this time? This led to the establishment of the rains retreat, and rules were set in the Vinaya monastic code to reflect this intention. However, there are exceptions. If there is a valid reason, such as one's parents are sick or one's preceptor is sick, then a monk may leave the monastery to spend the night elsewhere. This is for no more than 6 nights or no more than 7 days, after which they must return. There are also special circumstances, such as ceremonies involving a stupa or ordination hall. Then a monk may travel if it is for the sake of the Buddha's dispensation, but they cannot go for casual or leisurely reasons. Monks might travel to visit other monasteries to give Dhamma talks and teach. For example, during the time at Wat Nongpa Phong, after 15 days into the rains retreat, Venerable Ajahn Chah would lead both the senior and new monks and novices on visits to branch monasteries, sometimes to the south of Thailand, sometimes to the north of Wat Nongpa Phong, and each trip would last about 7 days. The monks would also gather together in Venerable Ajahn Chah's monastery for a meeting, and Ajahn Chah would give teachings to them. Because Ajahn Chah would send monks to live in remote areas that lacked monastic presence, and the branch monasteries would often request monks from Ajahn Chah, and he would send them accordingly. At times, Ajahn Chah had up to 70, 80, or even 90 monks, and after sending them out, about 60 monks remained at Wat Nongpa Phong. But he didn't just send them out, he would follow up, train, and teach them Dhamma. This was a core principle in their monastic training. So, observing the rains retreat must be done in a suitable place. It is not appropriate to observe the retreat in a water tank or in a dangerous area. Such places are not proper or safe for practice. There's also a tradition during the rains retreat for lay people to offer candles, rains bathing cloths, and other monastic requisites. It's a time when devotees and lay supporters come together to make merit. Here, when having the chance to stay continuously in one place in a monastery over an extended period, it gives the monks the opportunity to study the Dhamma and the Vinaya, the monastic discipline. At Wat Nongpa Phong, the monks would regularly study the Vinaya, where there would be a regular practice of reading and being taught about it after the evening chanting session. study would continue both during and outside the retreat, delving deeply into each rule of the Vinaya until there was a thorough understanding. Within the first 5 rains retreats, a monk must develop a thorough understanding of the Vinaya before being able to go on Tudong, wandering practice, in order to take care of himself and stay safe. Because each rule in the Vinaya can sometimes be interpreted in different ways, those who have been well trained and properly taught are able to explain them clearly for better understanding. And there is the study and practice of meditation, such as walking meditation and sitting meditation, which is intensified from the practice outside the rains retreat. For example, some monks will undertake Dutanga austere practices, such as eating only what is received during alms round. This too is a form of training and discipline. In rural areas during the rainy season, when it rains, villagers often have to work in the rice fields. They may then have less opportunities to offer alms. Normally they offer sticky rice or dried food, but when it's time to plant the rice, they have to leave home early to plow, plant, and herd the oxen. Monks who observe the Dutanga practice of eating only what is offered during alms round may receive just a ball of sticky rice, a small packet of food, or sometimes nothing at all, especially if they're near the end of the line during alms round, as the earlier senior monks receive food first. If you're the 10th or 12th monk in line, you may get much less, maybe just one ball of sticky rice or a piece of sweet. But when it comes to the state of mind, eating a small amount like that helps the mind to become peaceful. The mind gets peaceful. While eating, there may be the thought arising, why do I have to suffer like this? But the mind quietens down. When there is an abundance of food, the mind becomes turbulent, caught up in thoughts and preferences. This is called kama sukali kanu yogo, or indulgence in sensual pleasure. Sometimes after receiving plenty of food, monks may be in a good mood while washing their alms bowls. Venerable Ajahn Chah would discipline them, saying, "See, when you get what you want, your mood improves. You speak loudly." He noticed this. On days when there's less food, the mind withdraws. It doesn't become restless or overly elated. Instead, it becomes quiet and composed. During the rains retreat, monks would practice with greater intensity, eating everything only from the alms bowl, eating only what is put directly into the bowl, observing the Dutanga austere practices, not lying down for the entire 3 months, or maintaining noble silence for 3 months, and so on. This is part of training in Dhamma practice, which strengthens the mind beyond the ordinary. It's known as Tudong practice. The word Tudong coming from Dutanga, it means a scraper or a polisher, referring to tools that scrape away defilements, which is these Dutanga, austere practices upheld by noble disciples. There are 13 Dutanga practices in total, and Venerable Mahakasapa observed many of these. He made a vow to wear only robes made from discarded cloth, Bamsakula. He continued patching and dyeing his old robes until they became very thick, and never replacing them. One day the Buddha, seeing that Venerable Mahakasapa had grown old, wished to offer him his own outer robe in exchange with Venerable Mahakasapa's. But Venerable Mahakasapa respectfully declined the Buddha's robe, saying, "I wish to continue observing this Dutanga practice for the benefit of future generations of monks and novices." the term bamsakula, robe. In strictness, it refers to cloth used to wrap the dead, often still stained with bodily fluids and decomposition. This cloth would be collected, washed, and dyed. Even after washing, the smell would often remain, especially if blood or fluids had soaked into the fabric. When you left the cloth to dry at your hut, when you were walking to your hut and were 300 meters away, you looked at your kuti and you could see this piece of cloth first. It would immediately invoke the object of maranasanya, which is the perception of death. When putting on this lower robe or upper robe, there would be no pleasure in it. The recollection of death would arise. One reflects, our life must end in death as well. This very robe was once used to wrap a corpse. I have cut, sewed, and dyed this cloth. And when we have this cloth, then we gain a powerful meditation object, as it helps to let go of attachment and delight in material possessions, especially in one of the most essential items, the robes. We can renounce and relinquish that delight. Venerable Mahakasapa was considered foremost amongst all the monks in observing Dutanga austere practices. He was a central figure in the forest monastic tradition, known for maintaining the highest number of Dutanga practices. However, some Dutanga practices, such as living outdoors in the open during the rainy season, are not very suitable. After the rains retreat, monks would often stay at the root of trees, training and practicing with minimal belongings. When staying in one place for a long time, possessions tend to accumulate. But when on tudong, one carries only what's essential, since everything must be carried on foot, so weight matters. And when staying at the base of a tree, one becomes very cautious. Even sleeping is done with mindfulness. At times, one must be careful, arranging one's things properly around the mosquito net, because the mosquito net provides warmth, and certain animals, like snakes, may come close. So one must tap it first before entering. And they keep the mosquito net properly tucked in, so that it is used safely. If it isn't done properly, a snake might crawl in and sleep with you, and that does happen as well. The Dutanga practice of staying at the base of a tree, which we call a tree-dwelling monk or a tudong monk, it means wandering through forests and staying under trees, and along with that, practicing eating only one meal a day. Even if one is staying in a fixed location, one can still observe Dutanga, austere practices, as a way to polish and to refine the mind. For example, eating from the alms bowl, using only the one vessel, or eating just one meal a day. These are all forms of training and discipline, especially practiced during the rains retreat. Some continue these practices after the retreat to elevate the mind and to deepen their commitment to practice, especially for those who aim to strengthen their determination. During the rains retreat, monks study both Vinaya and the principles of Dhamma practice, and lay people also take part. There are some who may choose to abstain from alcohol during the retreat. However, there are those who abstain for 3 months, only to drink even more heavily after the retreat ends. This is not the right way. The purpose of giving up alcohol during the rains retreat is to see its harm, to develop wisdom, and to continue the practice even after the retreat. During the retreat, one may observe the 5 precepts or the 8 precepts on weekly Uposatha, lunar observance days, and come to listen to the Dhamma. Because sometimes we have a lot of work and feel tired and exhausted from doing that work. But nowadays, things might change, since we have Saturdays and Sundays off, so it might be possible to make some adjustments and changes. Even just on Saturdays, we might observe the 8 precepts. Those with more strength might observe them properly, that is, on Uposatha days. Now, for those who work, sometimes we're working and we say that after midday we're not meant to eat, but the workplace requires us to work until noon. So we might make an exception just for ourselves. We have to eat lunch, so we eat until 1 p.m. We move it 1 hour. That is considered as still being for the purpose of polishing away defilements. We may not be able to strictly follow the exact time, and so eating at 11 a.m. might violate workplace protocols. So we adjust the cutoff for eating. Perhaps from noon, we move it to 1 p.m. So we eat 2 meals, and that's acceptable. The goal is to train in observing the 5 precepts and the 8 precepts in order to create opportunities for meditation practice. One might start by practicing on Uposatha days or on the weekend for 1 day at a time. It may also benefit one's health. These days, many people practice intermittent fasting and eating less, or even abstaining from food occasionally. When one is newly ordained and begins training, monks with 1 to 5 rains retreats are called Navaka, new monks, and they are very important. If there were no new monks who came to ordain and to train, the number of monks would gradually decline. These new monks must first take dependence on a teacher as their guide and support. Even if they have extensive worldly knowledge, they must take up dependence on a teacher when it comes to the Dhamma and Vinaya, because they need to relearn everything in accordance with monastic discipline and spiritual training. Senior monks are those with 10 or more rains retreats, referred to as Thera, and those with 20 or more are called Maha Thera. But simply being a Thera or a Maha Thera isn't enough. They must be well versed in Vinaya and rich in Dhamma qualities, and to serve as role models for the monastic community. They should be individuals who are restrained, composed, and respected by the lay community. And then by monastic convention, such senior monks are called a Venerable Thera monk. Then they are given honor, and there is a tradition of mutual respect and reverence within the Sangha. The senior monks are filled with loving kindness and compassion. They set a selfless example for others to follow. Like in those days, life at Wat Nongpa Phong involved practical tasks such as drawing water from the well. The junior monks would do the physical work, while senior monks might hold the water filter, since the water from the well wasn't yet clean and needed to be filtered. Even if they didn't pull the bucket themselves, they would stand by to offer encouragement. And that moral support matters a lot. I recall one such moment clearly. We were working at the Uposatha Hall at Wat Nongpa Phong, carrying soil and then compacting it. That rains retreat, we worked some nights from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m, every night throughout the retreat. After work, we'd quickly bathe and go to sleep, sometimes as late as 11 p.m, and only to wake at 3 a.m. Some days we'd get to sleep at midnight and still wake at 3 a.m. to prepare for morning chanting, then go on to sweep the halls and to prepare for alms round. It was all part of our training the mind, to develop patience, endurance, and resilience. So those who enter monastic life are known as Sasana Pugala, or the individuals of the religion. The lay people build the monastery. They build the monastic structures, the Sasana Watu. These are the dwellings, the kutis, the halls, the Uposatha hall and temple. But the people, whether monastic or lay practitioners, are the individuals of the religion. If a monastery only has buildings of the religion, but no individuals practicing the religion, there are no people to look after the buildings, then the monastery becomes neglected. It's uninspiring and not livable. But when the monks uphold their practices and lay people help to maintain the monastery, sweeping, cleaning, and offering support, then the place becomes clean. It inspires an environment for chanting, sitting meditation, and the mind becomes joyful. So I encourage both monastics and lay disciples to set their minds on cultivating the Dhamma of the Buddha's dispensation to arise in your hearts, to become mindful and aware of your moods and mind states, to let go of deep-rooted wrong views of self, and to realize this is not self. By doing so, we can begin to free ourselves from the endless cycle of birth and death, samsara. We reduce it, and then we won't have an eighth life. May each of you practice with sincerity, and may you find success in your Dhamma practice during this rains retreat. May you grow in blessings.